Welcome to Couve.com. I'm your host, David Medore. We have for our guest today, forensic accountant and fraud investigator, Tiffany Couch. Tiffany has some news to share with our community regarding the dealings of the CRC, light rail tolling, I guess we call it a bureaucracy, and all the indications indicate that the responsible thing to do here is to call for a formal investigation. Tiffany, you've been doing some homework on this for some time. Where do we start?
Well, thank you, David, for having me. I appreciate being here today. I think we need to start first with the beginning of the project. And I recently issued a report dated October 8th, 2012, where I call for the responsible parties, namely our legislators, to further look into some potential violations of the Washington State Open Public Meetings Act. Because I've uncovered some contradictory statements that have been made by CRC and Washington State Department of Transportation officials. And those statements contradict some documents that I've had in my office. And as I've looked into this and interviewed several people in town who were part of these groups early on, I realized that this was too important an issue to sort of keep under wraps, and that it needed to at least be brought out to be addressed by the appropriate parties.
Okay, you've been working behind the scenes for some time, and you haven't really been free to share this, but
no.
Finally you've been able to compile it all together along with the evidence. You're a very detailed researcher. You provided all of the documentation, all the exhibits, and you have finally shared that, so the cat's out of the bag. What have you got? What is the bottom line here?
Well, I'll just bottom line you. When the Columbia River Crossing project started in 2005, it started what we call the NEPA process. Okay, and that NEPA process, the National Environmental Protection Act, basically calls for a large transportation project to go through a series of economic studies on the impact of a local area, studies on the impact, for example, of natural resources, mm-hmm. Historic buildings, and it calls for a large public process, right, where the public is part of the decision making of this project.
Right, so it's a very clearly laid out process that's designed to protect not only the environment, but the environment, a big part of that E in the environment is people.
Correct.
Impact on people, impact
Correct.
On jobs, on people's lives. So that process is supposed to be to protect people, not necessarily to protect a bureaucracy.
Correct. And so it was brought to my attention, gosh, probably well over a year ago, that a group called the Project Sponsors Council made some of these critical NEPA decisions back in 2005, 2006, and 2007. And I'm a pretty busy person, and I didn't have time to really, you know, check that out. But I asked for documents from the CRC office, because when I went to the CRC website to look for Project Sponsors Council documentation, I only found information that started in 2008. And I was being told that there was a Project Sponsors Council that made these critical decisions in 2005. So I asked for minutes, I asked for meeting agendas, I asked for things that would be kept in the normal course of a public official or a public meeting. In the meantime, I attended a meeting in August of 2012 where the Columbia River Crossing officials and the Washington State Department of Transportation officials gave testimony to the Washington State legislators.
Okay.
And during that testimony, one of our senators, Senator King, asked the Washington State Department of Transportation and CRC officials, tell me about this Project Sponsors Council that existed in 2005. And they are on record during that meeting, first indicating that a task force made the decisions on the NEPA process.
In other words, they purposely changed the terminology. They didn't want to call it a Project Sponsors Council.
And I can point you to a handout that they gave the legislators where they indicated there was no Project Sponsors Council at all until 2008. And if you'll give me one moment.
Okay, so basically the body that laid the foundational decisions that set this whole thing in motion, that body, according to them now, did not exist.
And let me simplify it. I had this document here that was dated in 2005.
All right.
And this went out in a PowerPoint presentation back in October 2005, and it also went out in a mailer to local area people in 2005.
Okay, so this is a CRC document.
Yes.
It's published by them.
It's published by them. If we go to the bottom here, we can see that this was published by them.
Yep.
Okay? And it basically talks about the NEPA process, and it tells us who's going to be involved in this project.
Okay.
And who the decision makers are. And back in 2005, if we go down here and talk about the Project Sponsors Council, it clearly tells everybody that this group will make decisions at each decision point based on recommendations from the task force. So we can see that back in 2005, that the CRC was telling everybody we have this Project Sponsors Council. And as we go down the list of the agencies who are involved, we can see that most of the representatives from these groups would be elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew about this document, and I had this document in my office. When I went to the meeting in August of 2012, and I'm very sorry, I don't have it, the Columbia River Crossing handed out a document called the Public Engagement Process. And I know we have video that shows Nancy Boyd, who is the Columbia River Crossing Project Manager. We have about a 30-second clip where she's walking the legislators through this document.
Okay.
And she's telling them that the task force made these really important NEPA decisions.
So basically, we've got here 2005, January 2005. The task force, not the Project Sponsors Council, which
right.
is the next one down here.
And the next one down there, if you
that
look.
That one, they show they didn't start to the middle of 2008.
That's correct.
And so these 23 meetings here are being accounted to the wrong group.
Well,
right?
That's a misnomer. The task force was a group, but in addition to the task force, there was a Project Sponsors Council, and the role of the Project Sponsors Council was to take the recommendations from this 39-member task force and make the important decisions.
Okay, so this is accurate. This
that is
task
accurate.
Force is accurate.
That is accurate.
And the Project Sponsors Council that started here is a different council that was back here?
Yes.
So we really have two.
There are actually two Project Sponsors Council. There was one that met from October 2005 till January 2007 when they disbanded.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a whole new Project Sponsors Council that was regrouped in 2008, and it was made up of different
people.
So we
have a missing
We have a whole missing group
body here
on their document. And when this came out in August of 2012, as well as the testimony during that first clip, I realized that the statements that were being made during the meeting were contradictory to some of the documents that I had in my office.
Okay, so we have this. Why is surely not simply a mistake? I assume you've talked with them about this. Why would they deny the existence of another body?
That's my whole question. That was my whole question. It doesn't make sense. If these folks met, if they made decisions, then why are, number one, are we not even acknowledging them? Especially since they gave one of the most important decisions of the meeting, and the Columbia River Crossing documents show right here. This is a 2006 document that was published by the Washington State Department of Transportation and the CRC project. That says, purpose and need, that the Columbia River Crossing Project purpose and need statement was approved by the Project Sponsors Council in December 2005 and is dated January 17th, 2006. So my question was, why, if I know they existed, why are they not telling us that they existed? Why just omit it?
Do you have evidence that they said that? Do you have
I do. We have two video clips from the August 20th.
Do you want to run one of them?
We can. We can run maybe the first one where Ms. Boyd is indicating that the task force made these important decisions.
So you can hear them say it in their own words.
Sure.
How about they communicate it?
Problems.
There we go.
So that was the pre-work that led to that 2005 initiation of the NEPA process, or the Environmental Impact Statement process. At that time, then, a 39-member task force called the CRC Task Force worked through a collaborative process that included reaching agreement at each of some additional project development milestones. So that's the group that identified the purpose and need. They identified the six problems that we're solving.
What year was that?
They met in the starting in.
So as you can see, she first talks about the purpose and need, mm-hmm. and then she talks about the six, I can't remember what the word she used, six issues that we were identifying here. They call that the evaluation framework.
So they're identifying, but did they actually lay the foundation? Did they actually identify or decide on key foundational, the bedrock for this project?
According to the CRC documents, contemporaneous or published back in 2005 and 2006, the task force, the 39-member community task force, came up with all of these recommendations, and then they passed their recommendations on to the Project Sponsors Council, who was then charged with approving the purpose and need, the evaluation framework, and several other important NEPA decisions.
Okay, in other words, maybe we better call the Project Sponsors Council 1 and 2.
So
basically, they're saying that the task force reported to, recommended to 2, mm-hmm. and 2 made the decisions.
So they're no, 1 made the decision.
But they're saying that the 2 made the decision.
They're saying that the task force made the decisions.
Does the task force have that kind of authority?
It does not appear that they did. According to their documents, the task force was more advisory, but the Project Sponsors Council was a decision maker.
Okay.
So, I said, if we have public officials in public meetings making decisions, then we need to have minutes, we need to have agendas, we need to have documents, right, that show us what was going on. And so I requested those documents from the Columbia River Crossing Project Office.
Okay.
As a result of that, I received some meeting agendas for Project Sponsors Council 1, and I was told in my email that this was an advisory group that made no decisions. So the documents that they were giving me that clearly showed these people were meeting were contradictory to the statements made during the legislative meeting in August, and concerned me because they came with agendas, but we didn't have any minutes, and we had no legal public notices showing people when the meetings were going to be held.
Okay. First of all, we're not just trying to be critical and to say that, they made mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
They somehow they need to get their documentation in order. That's not what's happening here.
That does not appear to be what's happening here. And the one thing that I did not understand was, if this group existed, if this group made decisions, why is the CRC office not acknowledging this group at all?
Okay, you have something that from a person who's been there from the very beginning, who's still there.
I do.
Who's still testifying. Do you have something?
So I think what's important to note is that as part of the public records request that was provided to us, an internal memo came along with those agendas that I was telling you about. And this memo is published by the CRC office. And it's an internal memo from a staff person in the CRC office to Jay Lyman, who, it's my understanding, is the CRC's general contractor in charge of the project. He's a David Evans and Associates employee. And they were writing to each other about the Project Sponsors Council. So this document did two things for me. First, This document proved that the Project Sponsors Council existed.
Sure, I mean, it says right there.
Right.
It doesn't say task
right.
force. It says, and this is the, which one of these individuals is still just, is testifying just the other day, still part of this same.
So Jay Lyman, who is an employee of David Emmons and Associates, testified at the Columbia River Crossing Project Oversight Committee yesterday, which was October 9th, 2012. So he's still obviously involved with the project.
So he wouldn't mistake a task force that was advisory compared to a sponsors council that was non-existent.
That's correct. So I want to be.
Not only that, but if we look here, we see the time frame. Mm-hmm. The task force was existing, they say, back at the beginning of 2005.
Which is correct, but they don't have the Project Sponsors Council at all.
So they don't have that
PSC.
They don't have PSC 1, they just owe PSC 2.
They only have PSC 2.
And so you can't really account for it here, especially with public, or what do you call it, open government.
Open government, open public
laws.
Meeting act, right? So one of the things, when I read this memo, two things. Number one, it proved the existence, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And number two, there were some key words here, decision-making.
So this is not advisory, this is basically.
As I see it, the PSC is a decision-making body. And then what's important to note is mm-hmm. this wording of this document went forward into the CRC Project Management Plan. It's a big document that was published that clearly also defines the Project Sponsors Council as decision-making. So number one, it didn't make sense to me that the testimony given on August 20th by the CRC Project Office representatives did not even mention the Project Sponsors Council. But number two, that we didn't have meeting minutes and open public meeting sorts of documents for a decision-making body.
Which is a violation of state law.
It is a potential violation of state law. And so my report is pointing out these contradictory statements with the documents that I have.
Okay.
And I think it's important, what's important to me is to understand this memo. And the wording in this memo is questionable. And I'd like to read a few passages okay. so that people understand why this is important, because it really speaks to the very beginning of the project and how the CRC Project Office planned to manage the process okay. from day one.
So I'm going to use the word cover up. This appears
That's
to
be. That's
your
word, not mine.
You're the forensic accountant that provides the information, but I can just tell you what my opinion is. It looks like a cover up.
Well, I'd like to read you some of the passages in this memo. So I'm going to start here in the first paragraph in the first mm-hmm. page. It is in the project development team. Let me define that. The project development team are the CRC Project Office employees. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's the project office.
Everybody in all the bureaucracy.
Right. Okay. It's made up of a whole group of people. Okay. It is in the project development team's interest to come to agreement on its preferences concerning the Project Sponsors Council as soon as possible, so the appropriate presentation can be developed, and mm-hmm. so we can work the issues, and they use quotations, work the issues with individual Project Sponsors Council members in advance of each meeting. Okay? So that, to me.
What does that mean? Is that kosher? I thought that decisions, the process of even deliberating to arrive at those decisions, the purpose for the Open Government Act, is that the right term?
That's right.
Is to ensure that everybody, lights are turned on, it's out in the open, that the process even at arriving at foundational decisions is public.
I would agree with you, and that's why this wording
seems to violate that.
It did seem to violate that. And when I went on to page two, and I'm not going to go
can
ahead.
Can I take a look at this?
Sure.
Here? So this says what they're supposed to do.
Sure.
Here we've been talking about the locally preferred alternative
yeah.
all this time.
And you see what they're going to do. They're going to approve the problem definition. That's the purpose and need. They're going to approve the evaluation framework. That's the.
The scope.
The scope. You know, we're going to look at all of these different alternatives, say a fourth bridge, a third bridge, a tunnel, and we're going to look at all of these alternatives based on different criteria. Okay?
So, for instance, there's been a question Sharon Nassett, for instance, have been pushing for a long time for a third bridge. Mm-hmm. And they, for quite a long time, they said that, oh yeah, it was evaluated. In reality, this restricted that scope to not even include that possibility.
It potentially did.
Okay.
So we can see that it was clear that the Project Sponsors Council was going to make decisions, and not only did they plan on it, but we have subsequent documents that show that they did make those decisions.
Okay.
So I would like to go on to page 2 of this document, where the project development team goes on to say, it is expected that each of the PSC decision meetings would result in a decision with no need for extended deliberations in future meetings. Now, if we go back to the first page where it's talking about working the individual members in advance of the meeting, if we work ourselves in advance of the meeting, then when we get to the meeting, we don't need to deliberate because the decision is already
foregone. It's predetermined.
That's what this wording appears to say.
Does that violate law?
If that happened, that is a potential violation of the Open Public Meetings Act, yes. If it goes on to say that this approach would require extensive coordination among project development team members prior to the meetings. Okay?
What are the meetings for? So that you can comply with a public process, right?
Well, I'd like to go on to talk about the meetings, because they go on to say, and I go to the second paragraph, the decision meetings would be open to the public, but only minimum legal notices would be provided and no display advertising would be placed. The Open Public Meetings Act is very specific about what kinds of notices have to be placed. And in fact, when I audit cities and counties, they have to keep large files of every notice that they publish for all of their public meetings. Of biggest concern is the next sentence, which says, we would not encourage public participation. Now remember, the Project Sponsors Council exists in 2005. It's made up of public officials. It's made up of public officials who are making decisions. As a result of all of that, the Open Public Meetings Act would certainly, or at least appears to need to take place. Mm-hmm. And that would include public notices for the meetings. It would include deliberations during the meeting. It would include taking minutes. And it would include involving the public. So statements that are contrary to that were questionable to me. And when I took this document, in addition to statements that were made that the Project Sponsors Council didn't exist, and then later on, the project office told me, well, they existed, but they were only advisory. They didn't make any decisions. Again, that was contradictory to documents that they provided.
Yeah, what they said they were going to do here.
Well, not only did they say they were going to do it, excuse me as I reach mm-hmm. across the table, but they're published, and if I can just move these out of the way, they published this project management plan, project controls report,
back in June 2006.
Okay. That's right. And it was approved by all of these people, both in WSDOT and mm-hmm. ODOT. Okay?
Okay. And there's that same name here.
Yep. He's the project manager. There's mm-hmm. his title. Okay? Yep. And if we go to the first page, page 1-2, I mean, it's the very first page of their published document. It says, the Columbia River Crossing Project Purpose and Need Statement was approved by the Project Sponsors Council in December 2005 and is dated January 17, 2006. So not only do their documents say what they plan to do, their published documents tell us what they did do. And because their published documents told us what they did do, and because I have a memo that indicates that they were planning to get around an open public meetings process, and because I have documents that leave off this decision-making body in 2005 in their current documentation, in the CRC's current documentation, I should say, I felt that this was important enough, because the decisions that the Project Sponsors Council made were important enough.
They're foundational.
They're foundational. And they, my report does attach the NEPA process website that shows just how critical these early decisions were.
Okay, if they didn't, basically, if they went did an end run around, if they didn't follow the process, if they violated law in obtaining, in making these basic foundational decisions,
well, let's
then
read the
what,
law.
What's the, what does they just have to go back and fix the documentation?
That's not true
or
at all.
Or does that invalidate these foundations?
Well, our RCWs, which are the Revised Code of Washington State, they give us that law. And they give us that roadmap. And so let me find the number one. Mm-hmm. Meetings must be declared and open to the public. So that basically says all meetings of the governing body of a public agency shall be open and public, and all persons shall be permitted to attend any meeting of the governing body of a public agency, except as otherwise provided. So those exceptions are things like there's a personnel issue and the
sure.
group has to go into
we
executive
session.
We have to session.
Protect somebody's
That's right.
privacy.
Okay. I would like to go on to what happens when they violate that. And I can show it to you in my report, but it's always better to show the actual.
Yeah, and we have to wrap it up here pretty soon.
Okay. So let me just wrap it up.
You according have another to clip you're going to show somewhere.
According to the RCW, if they violate the Open Public Meetings Act, two things happen. The people that were involved in the meeting have to pay a $100 fine.
Once or per meeting or what?
I believe it's per meeting, but I don't quote me on that. I need to better read the I need to read that again. But most importantly, the decisions made in a public in a meeting that was not open to the public is null and void. So you can imagine, and one of the questions that I have in my report is, number one, we need an agency of the appropriate jurisdiction to look into this, number one. And number two, if they did violate open public meetings laws, then is it possible that the entire CRC purpose and need evaluation framework and even the locally preferred alternative null and void because open public meetings laws were violated? And that's my question. I'm not a judge or a jury. I can't make that
right.
decision. But certainly the documents that we have in our possession call that into question, and I do believe it should be looked into.
So what you are doing here, you're providing the evidence.
I am.
As a forensic investigator, a fraud investigator, or a forensic accountant, you're saying, here are my findings. But it's not your responsibility to do something with it.
No, it's not.
It falls to the responsibility of the appropriate jurisdiction. In other words, hey, somebody should be responsible here to ensure that our government works the way it shouldn't, that it should, and it shouldn't just simply sail through for a multi-billion-dollar project in a way that appears to be violating the most foundational principles of government.
That's correct.
Whose jurisdiction does that fall to? Is that the county prosecutor? Is that the state attorney general? Who is it?
Well, the state attorney general, certainly they have an open public meetings section of that office, and they certainly are aware of this issue. But I've been told that they can't bring that sort of investigation because their job is to protect the agency, which in this case would be the Washington State.
So they are the defenders of the public agencies.
They
are. There must be someone that has the responsibility to defend the people.
That's truly in question right now. In the federal government, there are OIGs or Office of Inspector Generals in almost every agency
and federal funds.
But we do have state and federal funds here.
Millions of dollars
here.
In both.
And so one of the ideas is to have the Legislative Oversight Committee appoint a special investigator to look into these issues and others that I have and that others have. It's not just me. That would be one. Certainly, some of the folks that signed off on these sponsoring agencies, like, for example, the county commissioners or Metro or CTRAN, they could certainly say, hey, you know, can we, I don't know if they can renege on their signing off of these documents, that they could call for that. It's sort of in flux right now, but it certainly is important enough to be looked into.
And as a citizen, I would think then the risk here that is that here we're going forward with a ballot measure to fund this, to put gas in the car to make this thing go, and yet we're continuing to spend millions of dollars each month for the same bureaucracy.
$2 million a month.
With no bids, right? There's no bids on this, right?
No bids.
Just simply giving that money away.
That's right.
And no one is saying, hold it. This doesn't look right.
So
I would think that the appropriate actions, the responsibility, is to say, hold the presses, stop spending the money, halt, and to call for an investigation, a formal investigation. Go ahead and subpoena the records. We have some, and the other thing is we have individuals that have been very adamant pushing this forward regardless of any of the red flags. You brought up plenty of red flags in addition to this over the last several years on this, right, or a year?
That's correct.
And so in the middle of this election, the related ballot measure on this is Proposition 1. There's actually three Proposition 1s on the ballot, and they're saying vote for Proposition 1 parks, hoping maybe that they're going to vote for Proposition 1 CTRAN.
Mm-hmm.
There's some confusion there. That
there
should not
confusion.
Have happened. There should be Proposition 1, 2, 3, you know, increment them so there's no confusion. And not only that, but we have individuals that have been pouring money into this project, Jim Moeller being the one responsible for the last $50 million, 25 from the state of Oregon, 25 from the state of Washington, pouring money into it. He's up for election. If you like what's going on here, then re-elect Jim Moeller. This is my opinion. I know it's not coming from you. If you feel like you want more of the same here, then if this is fine, easy, well, you want light rail that bad, then just keep doing that. But I don't think that's a responsible action. We got Jim Moeller. We got I put together a website. It's prop1facts.com.
Okay.
It's in process. It's rough. It's crude. But I put a table of every candidate on there, and whether they support or oppose this light rail and toll project for this year. See, people can go there and find out who is for and against this one. And I don't mean to say that I'm campaigning this way or that way, but we ought to campaign for truth. We ought to have a common ground that we just simply don't violate basics.
Well, and I do think that there's enough information here to certainly warrant a further look, because it's certainly with an internal memo that indicates that the public process was trying to be skirted around, in addition to documents that indicate that this group existed and made decisions.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to current documents, which totally leave that group off altogether, it certainly minimally is questionable. And so it would be nice to know that somebody, whether it's one of our elected officials or some other special investigator group, state auditor, could look into these issues just to make sure there aren't any others.
And I would think that the greatest proponents, Mayor Tim Leavitt, who was elected opposed to tolls, and irrationally, it seems, he's pushing this thing beyond all, I mean, it doesn't matter what the stops are, he's pushing full speed ahead. We ought to get a statement from him. You ought to speak up and say, what do you think about this? What's the responsible action? I would think that the three city council members of Vancouver who approved this, the two county commissioners, Mark Bolt, Steve Stewart, who approved this, the other city council members that represent the other cities within Clark County, who approved this and as members of CTRAN, each of them are responsible for safeguarding this process. They should come forward and say, "Oh, I don't mind. This is okay. Don't just move forward. It's nothing." Or, "Wait a minute. I object. We call for a halt for further spending. We call for a investigation to find out what's going on here." I would think. I mean, that's not coming from you. That's coming from my own personal responsible as a citizen. I'm not an expert in this area, but it seems to me we can't just keep pushing it forward with this way it is. Did you have any other clips or anything? Anything else?
Well, I do know that there is a second clip if you want to run it at the end that. where there's about 2 minutes additional of testimony from both Nancy Boyd, who runs the CRC project office, as well as Paula Hammond, who is the Washington State Department of Transportation secretary. She's appointed by the governor, where they are point blank asked about the Project Sponsors Council, and they provide testimony that indicate that that group didn't start till 2008.
Okay. Well, if anybody has any doubt that in their mind, well, maybe this is just confusion. Maybe they're making mistakes, or if this is something in it that they're intentionally saying, well, lying. I don't like to use that word, but why don't we play the clip?
Okay.
And
they can make their own decision.
Yeah, let people hear for themselves. It's okay. Not my word. You're presenting it as evidence here.
Thank you.
So that CRC task force also developed the evaluation criteria and framework for reviewing and screening the project components and alternatives. And again, Chris will walk us through some of that detail here shortly. That same task force also conducted the screening process. That was an iterative sort of process that started with over 70 different components screened through a multi-step process down to about a dozen representative alternatives to five alternatives that were studied in the draft environmental impact statement, and then that was winnowed down to the one locally preferred alternative. That was the recommended preferred alternative. So following that work that I just described was the 2005 to 8 timeframe. From 2008 to 11 was when the Project Sponsors Council was charged by the two governors with advising the overall project development. So that was the completion of the final environmental impact statement as well as the finance plan for the project.
Nancy, can we take a break here? Senator
sure.
King has a question.
Thank you.
Sure.
So was the DAT task force that you were referencing that started in 2005, did it develop a purpose and need statement? Do you know?
Yeah, that was the group that developed the purpose and need statement.
Okay.
The bi-state CRC task force?
The bi-state, yeah. The 39-member CRC task force that was initiated in 2005.
We've had so many groups on this study, it's hard to take.
Well, and that's the problem. So. I mean, in all honesty, that's the problem we're having is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because somewhere here it was called Project Sponsor Council that was formed in 2005.
The Project Sponsors Council was formed in 2008, so
I've been told that there was also one that was formed in 2005, and then it disbanded. And I don't know the reason why it disbanded, but before.
Okay, so what we heard there is that.
What you heard there is not a cover-up.
I mean, this is like, okay, these who's asking the questions in this?
Okay, well, the gentleman asking the question is Senator Curtis King, his district's in Yakima, Washington, and he's on the Legislative Oversight Committee.
Okay, so the Oversight Committee is talking to Nancy Boyd, right?
That's correct.
Who is actually the person in charge,
person in the Washington State Department of Transportation in charge of the CRC.
And he's flat out asked her, was that the Project Sponsors Council? Okay. And she clearly said no, that was the 39-member task force.
She did say that.
Okay, well, where do we go with that? I think we have, you've got, this is one of a number of portions to share.
Right, I mean, there's so much information in our office that it's hard to disseminate in one report.
So we're going to have another one.
So we're going to have another one.
Okay.
All right.
Well, Tiffany, good work. Sounds like
David.
A little bit of Perry Mason going on here.
That's what's usually happening in our office.
I'm glad. I would never want to tangle with a forensic accountant fraud investigator. I'm glad you're wearing a white hat.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tiffany.
All right.
Okay, so we'll wrap this portion for now.